Chapter 13, Equus. August 31st, Mirth. Stavius opened his eyes and saw a dense green canopy of leaves overhead. He tried to sit up, but failed and fell back on the ground. He seemed to be lying on soft grass, which he decided was comfortable enough for him to close his eyes again and rest for a few more minutes. A moment later, he felt a warm breeze on his face and smelled a horrible stench. He opened his eyes to see a horse's mouth inches away from his, breathing on his face.
"Oh, what horrible breath! Back off!" he groaned.
The horse's head pulled away, and Stavius heard a soft but irritated male voice in his head say, "Well, good morning to you. Your breath is no bouquet of flowers either. Besides, you try brushing your teeth with hooves. I'm glad you're awake, though. You gave us quite a scare, human." "You sound like my best friend's mother," groaned Stavius as he closed his eyes. "She must be a lovely woman," noted the horse. Stavius' eyes flew open. He said, "Wait, you're a talking horse." He could hear the horse groan as it explained, "No, I'm not a horse. I'm a unicorn. And, before you ask, only mares have horns. Second, do you see my lips moving? Of course not. We communicate telepathically. What do they teach you in schools nowadays?" "I never really spent much time in school here, but I'm pretty sure that unicorns are not on the curriculum on either planet," Stavius thought. "Please use your voice, human," answered the unicorn. "I can easily send my thoughts to you, but your mind is so muddled that you sound like a mumbling drunk when you try to project." "I was saying that no, they don't teach us about unicorns," Stavius shouted. "Where are we?" The unicorn jumped slightly and quickly said, "Oh, my apologies for the improper introductions. You are an Equus, and I am Druvi. I am afraid that we have never had one of your kind visit us before. I hope you like fresh fruit. I have brought you a selection." "Thank you, that will do fine," answered Stavius with a much softer voice. "My name is Stavius, and I am eternally grateful for your hospitality. How did I get here, and where exactly is Equus?" "Ah, Bernice brought you and your friend Janice here 2 days ago. I must say that your friend is not nearly as polite as you," Druvi said with a shake of his head. "I cannot tell you where Equus is located, though. None of us, other than the centaurs, have ever been beyond the borders. All I can say is that it is a vast land of delicious green grassy fields, crystal clear springs, and forests of apples, pears, peaches, and berries. It is the most wonderful place on earth. Your friend should be back soon. Perhaps he has more answers."
"And what about Bernice? Is she all right?" asked Stavius.
"Bernice is a little weak, but will be fine with rest, although she is probably too stubborn to take it," Druvi assured him. "I will notify the guards that you are awake, and they will inform Bernice. I am certain she will want to visit as soon as she is able."
"Wait, guards? Are we being held here as prisoners?" Stavius asked with a worried voice.
Druvi just laughed and said, "No, of course not, Stavius. The guards are the centaurs who protect Equus and keep uninvited guests out. They are the reason why no dangerous species like yours have ever been inside of Equus. The centaurs built and continuously expand a massive stone wall around the entire region. They constantly patrol and enhance it to keep us safe. We would have been wiped out centuries ago if they hadn't."
"But why were we brought here?" asked Stavius. "What makes us so special?"
"That is what everyone here would like to know," admitted Druvi. "The guards have a strict policy prohibiting ever bringing any of your kind past the wall, and Bernice is the only one who could have overruled that law."
"Why? What's so special about Bernice?" asked Stavius.
Druvi whinnied a loud laugh and said, "Kid, you really don't know who Bernice is. She's been the head of the guards for the past 300 years. Bernice periodically takes short leaves of absence about this time of year, but has never brought anyone back. In fact, she is probably the strictest centaur of them all about upholding the law. You two are a real puzzle, and have been the center of our gossip for the past 2 days.
Druvi left after this conversation, and Stavius tenderly stood to limp over to a small spring.
Druvi was right. The water was pure, refreshing, and delicious. He sat down on a nearby rock and sunk his teeth into an apple from the pile left for him. He was famished, and the fruit was also delicious, but he wasn't sure how long he could survive on nothing but apples and pears.
Janice arrived a short while later and immediately ran up to Stavius and gave him a hug. "I'm so glad you made it, Stavius. People who lose that much magic don't often come back."
"Let me guess, they slip into a coma and never wake up," said Stavius.
"No, they die," said Janice in surprise. "What makes you think that?"
"Oh, nothing," answered Stavius. "I was just thinking about something I heard on Earth. So, what's it like here in Equus? Is there really nothing to eat but fruit?"
Nah, the food is great here. I think the satyrs just left that for you because they weren't sure how long you'd sleep. We'll get some real lunch later. This place is fantastic, Janice excitedly answered. I'll show you around a bit if you're up for a little walk. Stavius had never seen Janice this excited. He was usually more cynical, and now he was being, well, rather pleasant. Stavius almost made a comment, but decided against it, and instead said, I would love a walk, as long as it's a short one. I'm still pretty beat. The two boys slowly walked out of the woods towards some brilliant sunlight, which Stavius guessed was shining on Equus's fabled pastures. He soon discovered that his guess was absolutely right and that Druvy wasn't exaggerating the beauty. There were seemingly endless rolling hills covered with beautiful greenish-bluish grass. He saw small creeks, scattered forests, and herds of the most beautiful creatures he had ever seen grazing in the pastures. He saw a few centaurs in the distance and a herd of unicorns, obviously mares due to their shimmering horns, galloping over a rise. There were a group of oddly proportioned people tending what looked like a vineyard on another hill, but the most stunning sight was a herd, or perhaps it should be called a flock, of flying horses soaring through the clear blue morning sky. Are those? Stavius started to ask. Yes, those are Pegasi, interrupted Janice before he could complete his question. Aren't they beautiful? Then he quickly added, just don't stand directly under them, with a hearty laugh. They look smaller than I imagined, but yes, they are stunning, says Stavius in awe. Yes, there are a few different species, but most only stand about 3 feet tall, so no, you can't ride them, said Janice, but just look at how they move. A small group of Pegasi had begun trotting along the ground, and then, just as they broke from a canter into a gallop, spread their wings and began to soar upward. They might only stand 3 feet tall, but they had 6 or 7 foot wingspans. It was one of the most impressive and awe-inspiring sights Stavius had ever seen. I bet this is like heaven for a horse lover like yourself, I said while staring at the flock of tiny horses circling overhead. It certainly is, he answered. By the way, how did you know I loved horses? Oh, from math class, Stavius answered, still mesmerized by the flying horses. Janice was as pale as the moon as he grabbed Stavius's arm and demanded, What do you mean, from math class? Oh, my visitor recently sat by a kid in math class back on Earth who is into horses, Stavius stammered, hoping he could get himself out of this mess. That's a lie, shouted Janice. Your visitor remembers Mirth. You know who I am. You know the truth. Yes, sort of, Stavius stammered. You're awful, screamed Janice. You spied on me on Earth and used what you learned to con me into merging with Janice. Now he knows the truth and has abandoned me. I hope you're having fun laughing at me. I hate you, Stavius. I hate you. Janice took off running while Stavius stared at him in utter confusion. Sure, he kind of blurted out that he remembered Mirth while on Earth, but he had no idea why Janice was so upset. Furthermore, Stavius realized he had no idea how to get back to his camp and was standing there watching his only friend on this world run off into the distance when someone walked up from behind. You sure have a talent with people, Stavius, said Bernice with a snort. Whatever did you say to him? Bernice, how great to see you, shouted Stavius. How are you feeling? How did we get out of there? You were in pretty rough shape the last time I saw you. I'll tell you on the way back to the spring, Stavius, laughed Bernice. Now climb up. You aren't ready to be out and walking about. No, that's all right, said Stavius. He was exhausted from his short stroll, but remembered Bernice's dislike of being ridden. Don't make me lift you, growled Bernice, and Stavius quickly hopped on. I thought we were goners so many times that night, began Bernice. First, I thought the werewolves were going to kill us, but then you somehow blasted them with, well, whatever it was you blasted them with. Then I was sure I was going to succumb from my wounds, but somehow Janice managed to repair most of the damage, and then I thought we would all die because none of us had enough energy to get out of there. But then you gave me the gift of life. You gave me your magic. Hey, I figured I was going to die anyway, said Stavius. The least I could do was to give you a chance. Bernice stopped and turned around to face the boy sitting on her back. Tears were streaming down her bearded face as she said, I heard what you said at that spring. And few people would have made that offer, but you did more. I saw you put your hands on my shoulders and felt you transfer your life force into me. I saw you collapse on the ground as I felt the surge of power bring me back from the brink of death. I have never known one of your kind to consider sacrificing their life for a centaur, and yet you did so without hesitation. I lifted the two of you and carried you both here to Equus, because not only do I owe you my life, I now honestly believe that you and your friends might actually be the ones to fulfill the prophecy. You see, I've been studying and assisting your heroes for centuries because I believe that the prophecy impacts all of us, not just your species. I have never met anyone I felt to be worthy of the title of hero until I met you two. And I think you can succeed if you can keep from alienating your partner and can get your strength back in time to travel to Septumculus before the others are executed.
Oh, is that all? Groaned Stavius.
Well, at least that's the easy part, laughed Perdice. Once you do all that, you can finally begin working on the prophecy. But first, we eat.
Two smaller centaurs were also heading toward the thicket carrying baskets of fruit. It looked delicious, but Stavius found himself fantasizing about the meals back at the village and wondered what kind of meal Mr. Satish was eating. The centaur didn't stop at the thicket, though. She carried Stavius far away to the edge of Equus. Stavius realized he was near the border because he could see a tall stone wall curving off into the distance. He also saw what appeared to be a village filled with more of the oddly dressed people Stavius had seen earlier. They were wearing tight, colorful shirts and baggy pants with bold vertical pinstripes, and seemed to walk with an unusual gait. Stavius and Bernice were nearly at the edge of the village before one turned to stare at them, and Stavius realized who lived in this village. These people walked on hooves and had ram horns spiraling from the tops of their heads. This was a village of satyrs. Neither Staven nor Mark had ever seen a satyr before, and Stavius tried not to stare. Fortunately, the buildings in the village also demanded their attention. There were substantial, well-constructed houses made from wood, and a large pavilion in the center of the village square. This pavilion had elaborately carved columns supporting a vast roof covered in lush green leaves. The building was filled with long, similarly carved tables of varying heights, but seemed to contain no chairs or benches. The outer edge tables were all far too high to be used by a human or a satyr, while the center tables were on a raised floor, which brought them to a reasonable bar height. As a result, there was one square of counters at the edge of the raised floor, which was high on one side and low on the other. The reason for this design became evident as Stavius saw how it was being used. Centaurs were standing and eating their lunches at the long, tall tables at the outside. Satyrs were standing and eating at the shorter tables on the raised floor. Most seemed to prefer dining with their own species. However, a few satyrs dined across from their taller centaur friends at the tables along the edge of the dais. Stavius hopped off Bernice's back and she led him over to the lunch line. He saw that Janus was already eating but refusing to look at him. "Eat heartily, Stavius," advised Bernice. "Midday is when we eat our largest meal here. After this, there is nothing but horse food until tomorrow's lunch. And say what you will about satyrs, they are excellent chefs who love their food." The aroma coming from the outdoor kitchen confirmed Bernice's assessment, and Stavius's mouth salivated as he realized he hadn't eaten in days. There were several kinds of bread, pesto, tapenades, stuffed grape leaves, pasta, grilled vegetables, and a wide variety of other dishes which seemed to be of Mediterranean origin. Stavius and Bernice loaded up heaping plates of food and brought them to one of the dual-height tables at the edge of the dais. Bernice offered to get them some drinks while Stavius waited at the table and began sampling the food and looking around the pavilion. Everyone seemed to be staring at him, but he was getting used to that behavior here on Equus. He wasn't entirely sure what was going on because the satyrs were speaking a language he did not understand. Not wanting to be rude and stare at his hosts, Stavius began studying the pavilion more carefully. Everything was made of wood and the columns were not actually carved, but rather wrapped with thick grape vines. He realized that the green roof he had seen from a distance was actually the grape leaves. Large bunches of grapes hung from the rafters while bees and butterflies flitted among them. The tables, however, were intricately carved. Each leg was carved to mimic the grape vines, while the tabletops were etched with detailed scenes of satyrs dancing, playing flutes, and generally cavorting among grapes and grape leaves. Stavius marveled at the alluring effect of all this nature and greenery until he espied a different table near the center of the dais. It wasn't precisely in the center of the room, and it didn't appear to be dramatically different than the rest, but Stavius was drawn to it. No one was sitting at it, so he walked over to it and had extended his hand to touch it when he heard Bernice yell, "No, Stavius, get away from there!" Stavius froze and noticed a rumbling sound like rolling thunder coming from all around him. He looked up and saw every satyr in the room staring at him and quivering.
Satyrs have an unusual nervous tic when they get agitated. They begin to step from hoof to hoof anxiously, and this action becomes faster and faster the longer they are stressed until they drop their heads and leap forward towards their perceived threat. Stavius didn't know this fact yet, but the sound of 100 hooves beating a drum tattoo in the wooden floor clearly indicated danger.
"Enough!"
bellowed a gruff voice from nearby. The stomping quickly died down, although it threatened to roar back into full force once or twice as a nervous satyr's hoof uncontrollably tapped the wooden floor. An older satyr, wearing the most hideously bright yellow shirt Stavius had ever seen, approached him and angrily glared at everyone in the room until there was silence.
"Human, you not taught laws of our village like should be," he began with a deathly look towards Bernice. "This table only for village elders and their guests. No others ever allowed to sit or touch."
He said no more and stared at Stavius with a bright red face flushed with anger.
"I'm sorry, sir," stammered Stavius as he began backing away. "I had no idea. I appreciate your hospitality and will just quietly eat my meal and leave as quickly as possible."
"You no do any such thing," roared the satyr with his thick, broken accent. This caused the whole room to begin drumming again.
"Silence!"
he bellowed, and once again waited until the place was quiet.
"First, you tell me why you so interested in this table, human," demanded the satyr in a most threatening tone.
"Because it is beautiful," answered Stavius without hesitation.
"Nonsense!" roared the satyr. "This table looked no different than rest. Tell truth."
"I know. I mean, it is. I mean, yes, they all look the same, but this one looks different," insisted Stavius. He realized that his comment didn't make any sense and took a deep breath before his second attempt.
"All of your tables, including this one, are illuded with the same image," he began. "However, this one really is carved. It isn't just an illusion. This is a beautifully carved table, unlike anything I have ever seen."
"And how you know this?" the satyr suspiciously asked.
"Because I can see through illusions," replied Stavius, unsure whether he should be sharing this secret ability.
"I see," answered the satyr. "Say I believe you, which I may not. Why are you so interested? Are you searching for its secrets?"
"No," Stavius quickly answered. "I didn't know that it had any secrets. I'm simply interested because it is so beautiful and real. There are many wondrous creations in this world, but nearly all have been created using magic. Someone with a lot of skill and patience built this table, and it is amazing."
Stavius paused and looked around. "In fact, everything in this pavilion has been built, and not just magically created. Your clothes are real, and you are even really cooking your food instead of just magically preparing it. Everything here has been created by hand, although nothing else is as exquisite as this table." Mark had been amazed by magic ever since he arrived on Mirth, and so had Staven once Stavius was able to see illusions and throw some lightning bolts. It was an odd sensation to be so impressed by things which were not created by magic. All of this took skill and hard work to accomplish, and Stavius was taken aback with awe. The satyr studied Stavius for several moments before leaning back and erupting in a hearty laugh.
"Young man, you change mind after finishing meal. Nothing more exquisite than Staryon's cooking."
He carefully elongated the word exquisite as he said it.
"Go join Centaur friend for lunch. And Bernice, bring these two here tonight."
The satyrs resumed their lunch, but still kept a watchful eye on Stavius as he rejoined Bernice at their table. She softly commanded him, "Stavius, do not ever do anything like that ever again. We were both nearly lynched." Stavius and Bernice wolfed down their lunches in an attempt to get away from the satyrs as quickly as possible. That was, however, difficult because the food really was exquisitely prepared. The raw ingredients were delicious because satyrs farmed along the edge of Equus, where the magical force was weakest, just like the farms where Staven had lived. The cooking, however, was all done by chefs instead of by magic. The Mark half of Stavius compared the experience with eating a homemade meal made from scratch instead of one microwaved from a box. It was that good. Still, they managed to finish their lunch long before anyone else was done. Bernice rounded up Janice and convinced him to leave with them. The three travelers had only walked about a quarter of a mile when a young, hornless unicorn galloped up to inform them that the queen wanted to meet them. Janice began to complain that his belly was far too full and Stavius was saving that he needed a nap when Bernice interrupted to assure their messenger that they would be at the palace as soon as possible. Bernice hissed at the boys as the unicorn dashed off.
"You do not
refuse an audience with the queen, boys. Stavius grimaced and glanced at Janice, who immediately belched and said, "Lead on, Bernice." The three altered their course to follow the rapidly vanishing unicorn.